Welcome to Now Appalachia. The Appalachian region covers 13 states in the U.S., and over 25 million people call the region home. This podcast profiles the authors and publishers with connections to Appalachia and how the region influences and impacts their creative work. And now, here's your host, author and Appalachian resident, Elliot Parker.
And hello once again, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Now Appalachia. We are carried and distributed by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network all throughout Appalachia, all throughout the United States, and over 13 countries throughout the world. Listen to our podcast and check in with us from time to time. So we have some good friends in Canada that we hear from time to time, some good friends from England we hear from time to time, and all over the globe listening to our podcast. So if you're with us for the first time, welcome to the show. If you've been with us before, but maybe you've stepped away for a while, welcome back. We're glad to have you as we continue to profile the outstanding authors with connections to Appalachia and how the region influences and impacts their works. I'm your host, Elliot Parker, and we have a returning author with us who hasn't been with us for a couple of years, but she's back, and boy, is she back in a big way with a brand new novel that is just absolutely spectacular. It's called Beware the Tall Grass. Our guest is author Ellen Burkett Morris. She comes to us as the author of Lost Girls Short Stories, which was winner of the Pencraft Award, and the poetry chapbooks Surrender and Abide. Her fiction has appeared in Shenandoah, Antioch Review, Notre Dame Review, and South Carolina Review, amongst other journals. She's a recipient of an Al Smith Fellowship from the Kentucky Arts Council, and her essays have appeared in Newsweek, AARP's The Ethel, and O Reader Magazine, which is featured on National Public Radio. She holds an MFA from Queen's University Charlotte and currently lives in Louisville, Kentucky, and her brand new book is so fantastic, and I'm so excited to have her back on the program to talk to us about it. So, Ellen, welcome back to the show. Good to have you with us today on the program.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
I wanted to ask you first about this book, because one of the things we didn't mention in the bio is that this was winner of the Donald L. Jordan Literary Prize. So can you tell us a little bit about that prize and how your book ultimately was selected to be the winner?
Absolutely. That prize comes out of Columbus State University in Columbus, Georgia. It's a relatively new prize. I think this may be its fifth year, and its editor is Alan G., who is a fantastic writer in his own right. And the prize has a mission that involves telling uniquely American stories, stories that involve a number of things, but one of the things listed was integrity. And that's what made me think this book belonged in the running for that prize, because the soldier character in the book is very centered in his own integrity. So I sent it in to the Jordan Prize. The judge the year that I won, which was, last year, was Lan Samantha Chang, the head of the Iowa Writers Program. So I was quite thrilled to know that she liked what I was able to do with the book. But the Jordan Prize is fantastic. It's open to short stories, essays, novels. And it's unique because it's endowed and includes a $10,000 prize in addition to publication. So it was designed by its founder to encourage writers just like me, who are, newer writers who maybe don't have New York connections, but who are very serious about the work they do and want to find the right home. So I hope other writers will check into the prize as well.
Well, congratulations to you and to this book for winning that award, because it is just fantastic. And before we get into the book, I was interested to know and to learn that this originally was crafted as a short story, and you eventually turned the contents of the short story and made it into a novel. When did you make that decision, and what was that process like, taking, what we typically know of as a short story, 6,000 to 8,000 words roughly? What was it like taking that and then encapsulating that into a novel format?
Yeah, absolutely. I was at the Antioch Writers Workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio, taking a class from a writer named Erin Flanagan, who lives in Dayton, Ohio. And she suggested that the short story I'd written, which centered on a family whose young son had past life memories, that could perhaps be a novel. And right away, I'm a short story writer by nature. So I thought, well, I don't know how I'm going to do that. But what I decided to do was to extend the family story, the family's, this mother's exploration of what's going on with her son, as her son begins to share these memories of a warlike experience. And then I thought the only way I'm going to pull it off is if I add a second point of view character. So I decided to include a Vietnam era soldier and to do an alternate point of view. And I figured that between those two characters, this mother on a quest to help her son who has disturbing memories, and the soldier who's doing his best in a situation that just hands him things he never thought he'd have to deal with, I figured between those two things, I could build a novel. It took a while. It took me 8 years to really fully develop it the way I wanted to. But ultimately, it takes however long it takes. And I was really pleased to see that I think I found the story that I was looking for and got all of the pieces in place and did everything I wanted to do with the book. Though, of course, I would have been thrilled had I done it in a year or 2 years. So,
very good. And we'll come back to the two characters, characters that we follow in this alternate perspective, because they both are so interesting and so fascinating. And Thomas is the character you were talking about a moment ago, who goes off to Vietnam, and he has a terrible, sad event happened to him earlier in his life where he has to put down his beloved horse. And so he's trying to deal with the loss of that and think about what's beyond sort of this rugged Montana landscape in which I'm living in. So we'll come back to him in just a second, but we are introduced to Eve first, and you talked about the situations with her young son. And I love that you really set this up for us right from the very beginning, that something is just not right with Charlie, who is Eve's son. And you write on page two, and I want to comment on what I love about this passage, but also just all of your passages, but you really set up this so well for something not being right. You write on page two where you say, when he looked at me, this being Charlie looking at Eve after he was born, when he looked at me, it wasn't with the soft, focused stare I expected. His gaze had depth. He looked like he'd already seen things worth talking about. And from a writer's perspective, I love that. And what I love about your work so much is that not only is the language and the writing beautiful, but every word is important. And we really have to pay very close attention in this book and in all of your work to what your characters are thinking and internalizing, because oftentimes what they feel, their premonitions and what they're internalizing comes up and is very important as we follow throughout the story. So I love that as a reader from a stylistic perspective, but I just love how you really set that up from the very beginning, that something is just not right about Charlie. And I think that really kind of drives a wedge, not in some ways between Eve and Charlie, but also between Eve and her husband, because he doesn't seem to think anything is wrong, that she's overreacting and he's just being a kid and all of this. So can you talk about kind of Charlie being the linchpin in this family to some degree, because he's sort of siloing off or putting a wedge between different folks, his parents in this family and their relationships with him. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think any good story needs more than one thing happening in it. So we've got the drama of what's going on with this little kid and why is he recounting these horrible memories. But we also have the tension between the two parents, that one parent thinks, oh my God, I have to fix this. I need to find out what's wrong. And the other parent thinks, oh, I'm not sure this is a big deal. You know, Dan, the husband, had a mother who was addicted to a phone psychic and squandered a lot of the family's money that way. And so Dan's a skeptic from day one. He loves his son, but he's not sure that all of this is something that needs to be explored. And so I found that that added an extra bit of tension on the Eve side of the story that helped drive the drama. And when you talked about me and my writing style, I do think to some extent I'm aided by the fact that I work first as a journalist. And, you know, you really need succinct descriptions and to get down to the heart of the matter. I also then transitioned into poetry. So then again, you're looking at very crystallized images and you're looking at careful word choice. And so all of that has sort of driven me to write in a way that, you know, I'm not going to be the person who's going to give you 10 pages of this is what the town looks like, you know, but I'm more likely to be a little more concise about what, you know, what I put on the page and how. And, but yeah, that really is the story of how Charlie's dilemma causes tension in this family, you know, because these parents have different expectations and different views of the world. So.
And, you know, there was a scene on pages 45 and 46, which just made me sort of stop and kind of think, oh, boy, we Charlie has really got something going on here. And it's when Eve just kind of asks him just a simple question that, you know, all parents ask young children as Charlie's gotten a little older. She says, who are you today? And Charlie says, fireman. Well, what are you putting out? And his response is tree. Napalm got it. And I just sort of stopped and thought, oh my, that this is a character who is experiencing or seeing something that a child his age shouldn't know about, wouldn't know about. But that really transcends the story. And I really think that, and I love too how one of the themes I think that emerges, especially as we follow Eve's story, and we'll come to Thomas in just a minute, but a theme that kind of popped up in my mind as I was following her story is, what do you do when you don't get the life that you want, or you don't get the life that you think you're going to have? And that theme really came to me when we see Eve making peace with her own childhood, which was fraught with trouble, as her mother becomes ill and she realizes that her mother's going to pass away. And so there's this reconciliation and sort of this rectifying of, okay, my mother's not going to be here much longer. But it really kind of crystallized, I think, those scenes and those things that Eve is processing, that, you know, one of the themes is, what do you do when you don't get the life that you want? And I think Eve and Thomas, to some degree, both deal with that in very different ways. Is that something that you knew, that theme, something you knew was going to be kind of the thread that united the two stories? Or was that something that just sort of emerged as you started telling both of their stories? How did that theme sort of emerge?
Yeah, that theme really emerged as I began to tell both of their stories. And it was only a little bit later that I recognized that was a real linchpin for these stories. And it was when I sort of asked myself, you know, how did I come to write this story of war and motherhood and advocacy? And it occurred to me that when I was really in the heart of the first draft of this book, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer that would prove to be fatal. And I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. And so we were both facing a new reality, unexpected reality. And I think that I channeled a lot of those feelings about, hey, wait a minute, what now? What do you do? You know, the need to be courageous, the need to advocate for yourself and those you love into the story, however subconsciously that happened. I also think that it's pretty largely relatable for most of us. I think most of us end up, at least in one area or another, dealing with a life that we didn't expect to have. You know, so I think that's there for all of us to sort of connect to. But it was really clear. I mean, I think that's where a lot of drama comes in. Thomas thinks he's going to live on the ranch in Montana for the rest of his life and ride the horse he loves and have a peaceful, quiet life. You know, Eve thinks she's going to have this gorgeous baby boy. She's going to give him the perfect childhood that she never had. But, you know, fate had something else in store for her. So.
Our guest is Ellen Burkett Morris. We're talking to her about her brand new novel, winner of the Donald L. Jordan Literary Prize from Columbus State University Press. The title is Beware the Tall Grass. We'll come back to the book in just a second. And but I wanted to ask you, Ellen, you mentioned something that you started out as a journalist and you transitioned into poetry, then to some short story writing, and now writing a novel. If you only could pick one of those to write going forward, if somebody was to say, I'm going to only let you choose one and I'm taking the other three away as options, which one would you pick and why?
Oh, gosh. You know, my tendency is to say that I would pick short stories because it feels like it comes to me naturally. I think they're so much fun. You get to decide when to jump into the story and when to jump out. You know, you don't have to linger, you know, you're dealing with points of maximum drama and maximum of epiphany and, you know, all the good stuff with none of the boring stuff, you know, whereas with a novel, you really have to include all of it in there and you got to do all that world building. But, you know, now that I've done this novel and I have a draft of a second novel, it's hard to imagine giving up having all that space and room to tell a story. So it may in fact be novel that I would pick as my one and only form. Thank God that doesn't have to happen though.
Yes, absolutely. And I know that's a little bit of an unfair question. It's like asking you to pick your favorite work that you've authored because they're all kind of your literary babies. It's asking you to sacrifice one over the other. But yes, I understand that that there is something really cool about novels. And especially if you've been writing short stories for a while, making that transition into novels is really, really great. So what is your process like? How do you write when you get an idea, when you start thinking about, okay, I know I'm going to make this into a short story, or this is going to be the beginning of a novel. How do you write? What's your thinking and drafting process like? Take us through that. Walk us through that and maybe up to when you feel like you have at least your first draft or a semblance of a first draft ready.
Yeah. So with this, I heard a story on NPR in 2014 about a research program at University of Virginia where they actually tried to corroborate little kids' stories about past life memories by looking at news accounts. And I thought, oh, this is way too good to pass up. I've totally got to get into this. So I thought, okay, there's going to be a kid with a past life memory. Then I sort of looked into my own experience, which is that I have uncles and cousins who had been to Vietnam, people who I really love, who were very changed by the experience. So I thought Vietnam is going to be the war that I'm going to focus on because it's been so present in my generation's experience. And so I picked that. And then, you know, who are these things going to happen to? Okay, well, let's have a mother who is really determined to have it one way, to have this perfect childhood. And this is really going to gum up the work. So like, how can I get a character in trouble? That's trouble for a mother who wants to give her kid a perfect life. I drafted that story, built the family tension into it, came up with a conclusion, got that story published, and then went to the workshop where they suggested that it could be a novel. At that point, I knew I needed that second point of view character. And when I established that, I thought, well, what's my roadmap for each of these parts of the story? For the mother, it's going to be, I'm taking him to the doctor, I'm taking him to the neurologist, I'm taking him to the psychologist, I'm taking him to the past life regressionist. For the soldier, it was going to be, you know, this thing happens in my life, I need to escape, I enlist in Vietnam. And then I picked a major battle in Vietnam. And I knew that if I looked at the history and the books, I could figure out exactly where the soldiers were and when. So we've got basic training, we've got combat training. He's on the ground in Vietnam, and then we follow him through all the places that those troops went that ultimately put them in the place where this major battle was going to happen. It was essential for me to have a roadmap that way. And as I wrote it, I wrote an Eve chapter, then a Thomas chapter. So kind of hoping that as I did that, I would build unconscious echoes into each part of the story. So there might be a word or an image in an Eve chapter that would also show up in the Thomas chapter, and sort of employed the stand-up comedy tool of callbacks. So you plant these details, you return to these details, you call back stuff from earlier that's going to echo through the story. And I think a friend of mine told me that the writer Nancy Zaffer said, what you do is you use a detail, but when you return to it in a story, you deepen it. You deepen it in a way that enhances its meaning and also kind of gives it a bit of narrative propulsion so that it's leading the reader further into the story. So I tried to employ that, you know, as I was writing the book. And so I just went back and forth until I had a draft. I have several writers groups who've read the book, you know, time and time again. I've workshopped parts of it. I got a mentor with the AWP Writer to Writer program who looked at the book, Masha Hamilton, a fantastic author who was enormously helpful. I got an agent for a while, but that relationship didn't work out. Ultimately, I hired a developmental editor because I thought I need somebody to tell me, just, am I falling short anywhere? If so, where? And that person would say, okay, turn up the drama in this section a little bit, or I have a question about this. You know, it was by and large the best thing I invested in terms of getting a sense of what was working and what wasn't, and helping me make the book complete. So
the title of the book is Beware the Tall Grass. Our guest is Ellen Burkett Morris. And Ellen, I wanted to talk about Thomas a little bit. We've been talking about him and said we would get to him. And you alluded to a little bit just a moment ago of his experience. But, you know, when we meet him early on in the story, early on in the novel, we see him realizing that he's going to have to put his horse down and the impact that that is going to have on him. But he's such a kind, good, and decent person. And we see that early on, but we really see that as he makes the decision to enlist and gets drafted to go to Vietnam. What those characteristics about him being good and decent, I think, makes him and sort of compassionate, makes him, I think, the perfect character for us to follow into that part of his life's journey. But at the same time, it also presents challenges for him, too. What are those challenges when you have a character like him that's got this good, decent, sort of idealistic persona about things, but then at the same time goes and gets put into this circumstance where almost none of that seems to matter, or you're just trying to survive from day to day. What makes him such a powerful narrator to tell that part of his story and that part of the novel?
Yeah, I think because his idealism is going to bump up against the gritty reality of war and you know, the and the challenges that you get when you get into the wider world with people who don't share those values, who aren't compassionate or don't have integrity and do all of that. And really, for him, it just set up a series of challenges. Was he going to keep his integrity? Was he going to stay true to himself? Was he ever going to compromise? And so it was really crystal clear to me how he was going to react in certain very difficult situations, because Thomas was at his core this sort of very decent, very honorable person. So I just kept throwing roadblocks up in front of him, challenges and hard things that he had to do. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason the story works as well as it does, is that I really pledged myself to ultimate fidelity to character with him, and that I was not gonna, that I was gonna let Thomas be Thomas no matter what that meant, right? And so the very same things in the book that might make you cry made me cry. You know, the very same parts of the book that are hard or rewarding to read were the same to write, you know? But yeah, that is really the story of Thomas, that you know, he's an innocent in a situation that calls for experience, but he's always true to his own heart.
And we're running a little short on time, but I did want to get back to something else that you mentioned a moment ago. You said there is a draft of a second novel that is either in progress or finished. Can you give us a little bit of a preview about what that's about and where you are in that process and when we might see that imprint?
Okay. Yeah, that's called Mapping the Sky. I'm currently fine-tuning some revisions on this one, hoping to get an agent for it. I think it's a very marketable book. It's a young woman who is interested in astronomy. Her mother has ALS. They live in Cleveland. She gets a much sought-after internship in Hawaii to study the stars. She goes there. She gets involved with a work family, a love triangle, a celestial discovery, and a romance with a guy who is a surfer and protests the use of telescopes on the mountaintops. So she literally gets embroiled with somebody who stands against everything she stands for. It's a romance, it's a romp, it's a little bit sci-fi in a way. It's a love story between a mother and a daughter, and as challenging as Beware the Tall Grass was to write, Mapping the Stars was like a a trip to the beach, comparatively. So I hope to have that out on submission in the next couple months and would love to have it on bookshelves in 2026, 2027, but who knows?
Very good. Very good. But we certainly look forward to that. That sounds like a terrific book. And we'll definitely welcome you back onto the program to talk about it here on Now Appalachia when that comes to be. But as we finish up with you today talking about Beware the Tall Grass, first of all, how can folks stay in contact with you? Where can they follow what you're up to and how the process goes with your new book and everything else that you're doing in terms of marketing and promotion of your book now? Where can they follow you? How can they follow you? And then where can
Yeah.
we get copies of Beware the Tall Grass?
Yeah. So you can get copies of Beware the Tall Grass through Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Bookshop, and University of Georgia Press, which is the fulfillment for Columbus State University Press. So you can buy it in all those places. You can find me at EllenBurkettMorris.com. And I'm on all the social media. I'm on Threads, Ellen Burkett Morris. I'm on Instagram, same thing, all my names. I have both a personal and a writer's page on Facebook. I'm on, I'll go ahead and just call it Twitter at Burkett_Morris. And so if you search for me, I'm out there and I would love to connect. So thanks so much.
The title of the book is called Beware the Tall Grass. Our guest has been Ellen Burkett Morris. It is a brand new book. It is winner of the Donald L. Jordan Literary Prize from Columbus State Press, University Press. And congratulations to you, Ellen, for that. But this is a fantastic book that interweaves two stories of two terrific characters that you're going to fall in love with really from the very first page for a variety of different reasons. We have Eve, and then we also have the story of her life with her son Charlie and everything that goes on there. And then we also have a dueling story that you're going to fall in love with as well, because we get a chance to see another character going through the depths of being sent to Vietnam and the depths of heartache and grief. And you're going to enjoy following Thomas's journey as well as he navigates through that. But as we were talking about, you're going to fall in love with the writing. You're going to fall in love with the storytelling. It is a wonderful book. I really highly encourage you to add this to your to-be-read pile if you don't have it already. So, Ellen, congratulations on the book. So happy for you. So worthy of the Donald L. Jordan Prize. And good luck to you with promotion. And we'd love to have you back on when that new book comes out. So thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much. Always a pleasure.
We want to take a moment as we finish up on this episode of Now Appalachia to say thank you and a special shout out to our executive producer, Pam Stack, who makes these podcasts possible each and every time. We appreciate all the work that she does behind the scenes. And we also want to remind you, this is a copyrighted podcast that is owned and operated by the authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And that is going to do it for us this time on Now Appalachia, but please come again next time. And in the meantime, stay well and see you someplace soon, I hope.
You've been listening to Now Appalachia. This is a copyrighted podcast owned and operated by the authors on the Air Global Radio Network. For questions or comments about this program, and to learn more about the host, Elliot Parker, and his books, visit his website at www.elliotparker.com. Stay tuned. More outstanding podcasts are coming your way next from the authors on the Air Global Radio Network.